Welcome to Fresh from the Field Fridays with Dan the Produce Man and Ross the Produce Boss, bringing you what's fresh, local, and in season. From field updates to what's hitting store shelves and the hot industry topics you need to know, we've got the produce insights you crave, only on the Produce Industry Network.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Fresh from the Field Fridays on this lovely, lovely Friday here in the San Francisco Bay. Dan the Produce Man here with you, along with
Ross the Produce Boss, coming to you from the heart of the Midwest, Indianapolis, Indiana. And man, it's hard to believe we are at the tail end of August. Where has it gone?
Yeah, I love to see summer stretched for another 3 months, just to do a double summer,
Maybe we're starting to feel
down by the equator.
We're starting to feel some cool weather here. My daughter today was like, "Where's the heat, Dad?" I said, "Well, fall is coming. There's no avoiding it. It's coming." So
yeah, well, here it's still summer, and it ain't no bummer. I'm telling you that because we'll head into our heat season here in the immediate Bay Area, which is usually September and October is when we get our high heat, when everything's dried out and a lot of stuff is ending. But that's what we get here, and that's the way it goes. And I'm going to enjoy every second of it. I'll eat stone fruit to the very last peach or nectarine has been harvested from the tree.
We've still got some regional peaches, and I mean, including Michigan blueberries that are going on. But as I've told you, after this weekend and Labor Day, everyone's mind just flips. After Labor Day, it's all about apples, pumpkin spice, and everything nice.
Yeah, I can put that on hold. I'll tell you that. What about pawpaws? Have you run into any in your area yet?
Not yet. I haven't found any. I got to go to the farmer's market this weekend and see if I can raggle any up. But I was at a local Tuttle's Orchard, and they have like a little farm stand. They didn't have any last time I was there, but they did have some delicious sweet corn and also Michigan peaches that were really good.
Ah, very good. All right. Gotta love that peach season.
They're starting to pick some apples. I mean, they're starting to have some early blades and other things. So, I mean, we're starting to see that here in the Midwest. They've got caramel apple festivals coming up in the next couple of weekends and, pumpkins. Before we know it, it's going to be all signs fall here in the Midwest.
Well, August, I always called it the crossover month, the segue month. You get really good stone fruit. Henry peaches, there's still a few Albertas hanging around up from the northern part of the state now. And and you get the new crop apples, the new crop galas, the new crop grannies, some strawberry parfait apples. And the rave apples from up north are starting. So, you get it's best of both worlds in this window of time that we have here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's still a lot of local veg going on around here with tomatoes and cucumbers. This past weekend, I cleaned up my garden. And it was looking, some areas were looking a little sad. Some cucumber plants were expelled, but still getting a lot of little grape and cherry tomatoes. Those are plentiful right now. And I still got a lot of chives that are jiving.
Yeah, you and your chives, man. That's great. Well, hey, that's pretty cool. I did the same thing. I cleaned up the garden. I pulled out the old cucumber plants. The new cucumber plants are, about an inch or so tall, and those will go right into the fall. I planted some new tomatoes that will also go into December or first frost. So it's kind of cool to be able to have that. I guess kind of lucky here, depending on weather, but and one other thing, that I think is really awesome that we always get this time of the year, starting in July, is new crop grapes. Ooh. Those pink boxes behind you are really making a statement there, Ross.
Yeah, I think that leads into kind of what our subject matter expert today. Speaking of the boxes behind me, I was out visiting Grapery right before the season began. I was there early July. Started on the south side of California, making my way north to OPS. And so I was there in early July, and I got to go test some stuff right before they were getting ready to harvest it, check everything out. The warehouse was getting ready for lots of shipments. They were cleaning, just doing everything they could before all those boxes are going to start flowing through there. So
beautiful. Well, there should be lots of sugar in them now. Hey, that's for sure.
I've got some here and I've been snacking on them. So I've got the gumdrops and, yeah. And, you know, Patrick's favorite, the old cotton candy, but we'll get more into that. I think we should take our first break and then we'll hear from our subject matter expert.
Good idea.
From the heart of the still, where steam curls and fresh mint leaves release their essence, this is a Wahi mint oil. Soft, sweet, and smooth as a morning breeze through a mint field. With its naturally earthy aromas, it's the perfect touch for summer drinks, cooking, and diffusing. And like nature's finest, it only grows richer and sweeter with time. Straight from the still, pure, fresh, timeless. A Wahi mint oil.
All right, well, here it is, the end of August, and we've got to talk grapes. And if you couldn't tell, I mean, if you're watching our video, you're listening, we've got a special guest, Jim, the CEO of Grapery. And if you're not familiar with him, you will know way more right after we listen to some of the things that he's got going on. So welcome, Jim, to Fresh from the Field Fridays. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Happy Friday. Glad to join you.
Yeah, happy Friday. You know it, brother. That's for sure. Hey, grapes are happening. Well, they're always happening. I mean, that's like, you know, one of the world's most favorite pieces of fruit. You know, holding a couple of grapes here. Look at that, folks. Those
some
are grapes.
Raindrops and some teardrops there.
Yeah. Oh, these aren't cucumbers? These aren't pickling cucumbers, gherkins? Right. So a lot sweeter, that's for sure.
Left out fun with grapes here.
So you've been at the helm of Grapery since 2008. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. My partner, Jack Pandel, started the company in the mid-90s and started really to shake things up and do some things differently around 2008. And that's when I joined. And he and I have been running it ever since.
So, I mean, obviously, you've seen a lot of changes in your time there, you know. Obviously, the old cotton candy here have been a game changer for you guys. I don't think there's anyone that does it as well as what you guys do and have built the brand in such a way. So, you know, with that being such a game changer, how are you kind of approaching now, you know, developing new varieties that are going to appeal to consumers?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. The more we learn about what consumers get excited about and what they enjoy in grapes, it feels like the more we still have to learn. I mean, we're learning from people all the time. And I tell people, you know, there's no way we could have built the company that we've built over the last 15 years if we were doing this a generation ago. Because starting with email and then social media and all the different ways we have to have a really rich dialogue with consumers has let us really stay in touch with what consumers want and how do we meet their expectations and are we meeting their expectations, right? You got to do the job right every day. And if we ever let people down, we hear about it and we want to hear about it because that's how we get better. That's how we stay in tune with what people are excited about, what they like, what they don't like, as preferences change. And so, you know, there's still, it's remarkable the dialogue we have with people and how frequently consumers are disappointed in grapes, right? But consumers don't know usually seasons or country of origin, or even varieties are really hard to track and follow. And so the different kinds of the range of experiences you can have as a shopper when you go into a store and buy something that looks nice, but one day it might be sour, one day it might be sweet, the next day it might be crunchy, the next day it might be mushy. You might have, you know, all kinds of issues and different experiences going on that confuses people. So we number one, the biggest thing that we do is try to be consistent, just try to get to where every bag is the same. So that shopper knows they can count on something when they go into the stores and buy what they buy.
How do you do that when early in the season, you know, the grapes have less sugar on them? And do you think consumers might be a little bit marred because up until recently, the grape season would start with California Perlettes, which were always picked too early and just sour, before leading into the traditional Thompson Seedless, which really doesn't get good until right about now and into September. The Flame Seedless and the Crimsons have always been good, but these are older varieties. And do you think that consumers maybe just are still, well, we got a lot of newer generation, I guess, that wouldn't have that older experience. But how do you gauge the sugar on the grapes before releasing them out? I mean, you obviously want to get them to the market as early as possible, but you also want to get them there when the Brix level is there. So how do you differentiate that between, say, something now or even next month?
That's a great question. And that's the hardest thing we do. So it takes a ton of patience and a ton of discipline. The biggest secret to what we do is we just let grapes get really ripe before we pick them. And nice. It's really easy to say, but it's really hard to do. Grapes are a non-climacteric fruit. And that means that they don't continue to ripen after you harvest them, as opposed to bananas or peaches or tomatoes or all sure. lots of apricots, lots of fruit out there continues to ripen after you harvest it. Grapes don't. So they are at their peak. The second you cut them off the vine, they can only get worse. They can't get any better. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we're only picking the ripest grapes. Now, when I say it's the hardest thing we do, it's because when you walk up to a grapevine, and let's say it has 50 or 60 clusters of grapes on it, pretty much doesn't matter what the variety is, not all those clusters get ripe at the same time. And the one that gets ripe yeah. first gets ripe about 6 weeks before the one that gets ripe last. And there's everything in between. And each cluster has about a 5, 6, 7 day window where it's at its peak ripeness and flavor. So we have to go around and around and around and around the field. And we have to always pick all the ripe fruit, not pick any of the unripe fruit, right? Because if we miss some, it'll all be over the hill and no good by the time we come back.
But meticulous hand harvesting, right?
Yeah, and it's all hand harvesting.
Whole chain too.
Yeah, so we have 2,000 people this week spread across two counties.
Wow.
Picking grapes today. And we're counting on all these people to do the same job, to only pick the cotton candy clusters that have the cotton candy flavor. And that, like I said, that's the hardest thing we do. But we have a whole innovative harvest and quality system that's a different approach than what most companies do.
Training, besides the harvesting, training them to know.
Training them to know, and then motivating them to pick for flavor, not for volume. So yes. So up until last year, I made every decision on every block of grapes every day about what maturity level we harvested at. Because over the years, I'd tasted so many grapes and I knew what consumers would respond to or wouldn't respond to. So it's a visual thing where I go out in the field and I say up until last year was me, we've added a couple people because it just gets spread too thin, who I've trained to taste the same way I do. But we walk through the field every day and we look for cues, visual cues that indicate what might be riper than the other bunches. So it might be color, it might be stem condition, it might be if the cane that it's growing on is cured or if it's still a green vegetative cane. It might be the size of the bunch, if it's a loose bunch or a tight bunch. It might be how much sunlight it has on it. There's all kinds of visual cues. So go and taste, and identify which are the cues that are going to give you consistently the best flavor. And then we show those examples to the crews and have them pick those. Once you set that, though, and every day, every variety, every block can be different, right? There's no rule of thumb where, well, this variety is always going to work at this level. But once we identify for that day, then we can measure the sugar, which are Brix, in the fruit, and it correlates pretty exactly with a Brix level that will always give you that flavor for that variety, for that field, for that day. So then we have our quality control teams go around measuring the bricks all day long, every day. And every picker that we have gets a score every day on the maturity of the fruit they're picking. And if they meet our minimum maturity standard all week long, they get a cash bonus the next week. So it's a different way.
So if you make the grapes sweet, they're out there with little syringes with sugar water. And what about de-leafing and stuff? Does de-leafing help with that? Does that help, or is that just putting energy into the fruit? Or does it help with the sweetness?
Yeah, there's a lot of leafing work that we do throughout the year, and it's a balance, right? You can do not enough, or you can do too much. And sunlight, the right amount of sunlight on the fruit goes a long ways towards developing flavor. And so when we walk into a vineyard, a mature vineyard in the summertime, we want to see what we call leopard spots on the ground, of kind of dappled sunlight hitting the ground in different places. So as the sun moves through the sky during the day, the fruit's a lot of times in the shade, but getting some occasional sun. That's just the right amount of leafing. If you leaf too much, then you'll sunburn the fruit. You'll cook it. The fruit won't taste any good. If you don't leaf enough, you don't get the flavor in.
Interesting.
So I did want to, I was there. You guys gave me the clicking with consumers across the country from last year's, which I thought was really cool, about how you kind of look at what consumers are talking about grapes and kind of getting into this. How have consumers' taste buds kind of evolved over the recent years? And then how do you go about educating consumers and retailers about the flavor and the forward grapes that you guys are offering compared to, Dan touched on some traditional varieties, but you guys have so many special varieties. How do you get that message out there?
Yeah. As we've had more success, it's gotten easier. But I remember in the early days, it was really hard to convince people that flavor was important and how important it can be. We have so much pressure in our food system to deliver food that is cheap, with great appearance and long shelf life and big size. And that's all great. And I know why those things are important. But as you get breeders and farmers innovating around how you deliver that, and farmers are and breeders are innovative people. We have been forever, all around the world, no matter what the crop is. We get really good at that because that's what we hear from the trade a lot. And what happens is you end up eliminating the flavor out of grapes, right? So by the time, we started to see grape consumption drop because these newer varieties had bigger size and better appearance and longer shelf life, and you could grow bigger yields, you could offer cheaper fruit. They were all eliminating flavor. We started to see per capita grape consumption go down.
Oh, yeah. What was that green grape variety that they were, that first one that was hitting commercially, that really big green?
Autumn Crisp.
Not Autumn Royal. Chagrin, sugar one.
Autumn King.
Autumn King. There was one before that, though, wasn't there? Well, anyway.
Scarlet Royal was a red one that had some tough flavors. And then black grapes historically have a lot of astringency if they're not picked quite right. So that can turn people off. But that
Autumn Royal is amazing, though.
It's developed by
International Fruit Genetics, which is not GMO. And there's millions of plant varieties crossbred that you guys have done to get to these specific flavors of your moon drops and your sun drops and your
teardrops, everything.
Drops and all these. I mean, so it's a lot of work. I mean, a lot of just to bring that kind of love to the folks out there. Seriously, man.
Well, and
yeah, but it's exciting because the grape genome has 28 chromosomes, not 23 like humans. I mean, the grape genome is incredibly diverse. So what we do is we go around the world and we find these wild species of grapes that have amazing flavors that you would never think the kind of flavor you'd find in a grape, because you can never find that in a grocery store. But they've got big seeds or thick skins, or they all fall off the vine right when they get ripe, or they turn to mush. So you can't create a commercially viable product out of them and get them to consumers. But we take all these and we crossbreed them. Like you said, it's not GMO. It's all traditional cross-pollination. Mm-hmm. We cross them with standard seedless, thin skin, crunchy textured grape varieties. Mm-hmm. And we're getting the best of those flavors into these grapes. And that's how we came up with cotton candy and all these gumdrop varieties and everything else we're doing. It tastes so amazing. It's so much fun to introduce these natural flavors to people all around the world, how good grapes really can be.
Yeah, my neighbors were like, how the heck did they do this with cotton candy? And I'm like, natural breeding. Like, this is non-GMO. This has been through a process. And I said, it's just gets these flavors. And so because I had a couple bags from you guys, I gave one to my neighbor. They had her grandson over this past weekend. He's like, oh, man, that's good. And I said, here you go. Take the bag. Enjoy. Trying to get education and get more consumers out there to realize that fresh produce can be amazing.
Oh, it can. It's so exciting, the range of flavors we can get, and a lot of people ask us, what are we coming up with next? We're bringing to life flavors that occur naturally all over the grape world. So whether it's grapes that just taste really good, like really good grapes, like Dan, it sounds like you might remember, like the old Rebeers and some of those other varieties.
Oh, the Tokays,
Rebeers. Great flavor, right? We're bringing those flavors back.
Nice.
And we're also getting all these unexpected shapes and flavors into grapes. And so, you know, when we start breeding all this stuff, we don't know which one's going to come out. It was serendipitous to find one that tastes like cotton candy. There is some cotton candy flavor in wild grapes grown in different places around the world, but we didn't know we were going to get one that tasted like cotton candy. So we have, you know, all these flavors coming out that are like tropical-like flavors and these stone fruit-type flavors and all these fun things, but they all occur naturally in the grape world. So we're not ever going to have a grape that tastes like chocolate. And we're not ever going to have a grape that tastes like steak.
You can leave that for the steak and for the chocolate. That cotton candy was derived from a Concord, from what I was reading. It's absolutely amazing what you guys can do. We're going to take a quick break, hear from our second sponsor, and we're going to come right back with Jim right after this.
120 years ago, in Groningen, the Netherlands, a small produce business began, trading fresh local fruits. By the 1930s, the Vandenberg family moved to Rotterdam, Europe's burgeoning fruit hub. But when the 1940s brought turmoil, they fled to America, rebuilding their legacy in fresh produce. In 1958, Jack Vandenberg became a trailblazer, importing fresh Chilean fruit to the US, opening doors to global flavors. Today, that spirit of growth and innovation continues with sustainable packaging, carbon footprint tracking, and the finest fruit varieties. We're redefining freshness for the future. Family, fresh, innovation, celebrating a legacy 120 years in the making. This is Jack Vandenberg.
Hey, and we're talking with Jim from Grapery. And Jim, I just had a two-part question here for you. You know, looking at your tenure of CEO at Grapery, what are some leadership lessons that you've learned of such an innovative produce company? And then being on the farming side in different, you know, so many different facets of the business, how are you staying connected with, you know, kind of the consumers and the farming side?
Great questions. You know, I grew up in the vineyards and I've done every job there is to do in the fields. My dad would leave me out in the cruise down in Arvin when I was 5 years old to start picking grapes on every weekend. Oh, cool. When I was off school during the summers, and I loved it. I mean, I was pruning in the winter and leafing in spring break and brushing perlettes. Nice. And then picking grapes and stamping boxes and weighing boxes. I've done it all and I love it. You know, it's a passion for growing great grapes, and it's a respect for the people that work in the fields and how they provide something healthy for people to eat. And we want to carry that passion for grapes are one of those pieces of food that can make healthy eating fun. And that's a passion that we want to carry to consumers and share that joy and that passion that we have with them. And then when they react in such a great way, we share a lot of consumer reactions with all of our workers and they get more excited. So it's this great virtuous cycle and we all have so much fun doing it. And you know, I'm in the fields every day. I stay really close to how the fruit's changing throughout the year and what kind of quality we're doing. And I read every consumer comment on every email we get, every social media. Really engaged with what consumers do with us. And we work really hard with our retailers to partner with them, right? To give we talk about giving our grapes the stage they deserve so that shoppers can come in and be thrilled and excited by something that tastes this good. And when we carry that message back to the farm, so we talk about, you know, what is it that you really can deliver on that's going to make consumers excited? And it's a fun business. So I think, you know, lessons learned in leadership are, number one, always act with the highest levels of integrity and honesty. I mean, you'd be amazed at some of the things I've run across in this business. And not just this business, right, in life. And so, And I think just be honest with everybody and act with integrity in every decision you make. And that carries a long way. And we've worked really hard to have that reputation. And beyond that, just be passionate about what you do. And look, you got to be smart and you got to know the numbers and you can't take too big risks. But if you're passionate about what you do and you're honest and you're paying attention just day in and day out and you're you're just there watching the crop grow, reacting to weather conditions, or, you know, reacting to what consumers think, or tasting new varieties so you know what to breed. You just got to be there. You just got to get your hands dirty, be involved all the time. I have an open door policy, so anybody in the company come talk to me about anything they want. I'm fluent in Spanish, so that's how we do things day in, day out.
We'll just have to call you the grape whisperer. You know, you've grown up in the orchards. You're out there whispering to the grapes each day, saying, "Are you ready? Are you ready?"
I eat so many grapes, it's ridiculous.
And these new varieties are, some of them are, I guess they're proprietors, but I'm trying to think, because not with the witch finger, that's not yours, it's someone else's.
They have the moon drop.
We did the witch fingers.
This one here, the moon drops.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a sapphire variety, correct? There's a couple of sapphire varieties, correct? But then you adopt them and you brand them. So a lot of grape growers are growing their own grapes, I guess, or are they all coming from this IFG?
You know, it's interesting. It's a good question. I think we have a habit in this industry of trying to promote varieties. And the first time I started selling grapes, because I grew up in the fields, and when I joined Jack, I drew the short straw and had to learn how to sell some of these grapes. So I'm going to talk to grape buyers at grocers, and I'm saying, well, we got this Sweet Celebration and Sweet Surrender and Sweet Sunshine and Sweet Scarlet. Sweet Scarlet is a USDA variety. Is that the same as Scarlet Royal? And I mean, all of a sudden you start listing off all these varieties and there's more every year, and grape buyers are confused. And I thought to myself, you know, there's no way we're going to get a consumer to know any of these grape varieties if the people in the industry can't even keep track of them. I can't keep track of them. I don't know what varieties that are out there. So these brands, right, that we've created, Moondrops, Gumdrops, Teardrops, and our Limited, those are consumer experiences. And we put all kinds of different varieties into those brands.
Sure.
Because it's all about what that experience is with the consumer. And I remember telling people this at the beginning, you know, and you remember this, but like the difference between a good Thompson and a bad Thompson is huge. Same goes for every variety since then. It's not the variety that matters. It's, did you pick it ripe? Who's the farmer that did it? Did he do the right job and deliver a great product? Because even a variety like Autumn Royal, right? You've had it when it's amazing and it's one of the best things you can ever eat. But an Autumn Royal picked at 17 bricks before it's fully ripe, tastes bitter, and it's last.
Yeah, we don't want a purple Autumn Royal. We want a black Autumn Royal.
Exactly. So you got to have the variety has to be ripe. It's not about the variety. And too many people in the grape world ship a lot of varieties that don't meet the consumer expectation for what it's like when that variety is ripe. So that's why we brand those consumer experiences. A gumdrop is going to taste like grape candy. Today, we put three varieties, different varieties into that, but they all taste like grape candy. It's like Skittles. You know, every Skittles has a little bit different flavor, but they all taste like Skittles. It's the same idea. We're going to make sure the consumer has that experience.
All right, I'm going to try this gumdrop right now.
Well, and I think that bodes into kind of what's happened with cotton candies on the import side. Mm-hmm. They've kind of become not as the same cotton candy experience of what you guys have kind of built on the California side. So
we see that all the time. I mean, we have retailers that call it diet cotton candy for the imports. And, you know, I see there's certainly a lot of good farmers in a lot of countries that are delivering the right product, but collectively imports deliver a tremendous amount of subpar cotton candy. That's
14, well, it's not just grapes too. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's 14, 15 bricks. It's got the name cotton candy on it. So people think it's going to taste like something special and you get charged more money for it. And then it doesn't taste any good. I mean, talk about making people mad. It's a problem.
Well, that deters future sales from when it truly is in season. Last week, we were talking about eating what's in season. And when the real cotton candy is in season from California, and like you said, picked at the right time and by the right, you know, growers and the whole bit, the experience is completely different. But if someone eats an import that's sour, they're not going to want to try it again when the local stuff is in the stores.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Right.
And that's why we finally, in the last 2 years, have gotten involved in imports, because there are growers in these other countries who do a great job, who are committed to quality. And we've been teaching them how we do it, right? Which is a novel approach to how you harvest for flavor and how you farm for flavor. And we're having some really good initial success these first couple of seasons. So getting like grape relabel cotton candy in front of people out of Chile or South Africa or Peru and some of these other countries that import grapes to the U.S. or export grapes to the U.S. that has that consistent flavor that people can count on. And hopefully that's going to start to make a difference and turn the tide to where, you know, we're going to, because none of us benefit from consumers that are upset with a grape purchase, because it's too easy to go buy strawberries or cherries or, you know, raspberries or something else that tastes good if you get disappointed somehow in the grapes you buy, and whether it's in the winter, the spring, or the summer.
Absolutely. And all through my produce career, every place that I've worked, I've always, and even my own store that I owned, I always made it clear that, you know, you don't want someone to come in and buy something one time and then never buy it again. You want those consistent sales, and you want their eating experience to be incredible. What keeps consumers coming back. That's what keeps them eating fresh fruits and vegetables. But like you say, there's a lot out there that don't do that. So I'm very impressed with the standards that you have put forth and that you're putting those standards upon the importers as well, or the exporters, I should say.
Well, and as we kind of wrap up here, where can consumers look to connect with Grapery online?
Yeah, we've got a website, grapery.biz. We are on all the social media. You can follow us and comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at info@grapery.biz. We answer every email within 24 hours. We'd love to hear from people. So reach out and go support your local grocer and look for Grapery Grapes. August, September, October is the peak of the season. A little bit in July and a little bit in November. And then hopefully more often during imports coming up.
Awesome.
Wow. Great. We could go on all day long, I'll tell you. There's so much to discuss about grapes and so much conversation we could have, but it's sure been a pleasure having you, Jim Beagle, that's for sure, from the Grapery.
It's an honor to be invited and participate, and hope you guys have great success here with Fresh from the Field Fridays.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. And that gumdrop grape that I just tasted, it felt like I put a nickel in the gumball machine and got myself a gumball. So, hey. That's how tasty it was, that's for sure.
The gumdrops are one of my favorite. I really like them.
I like all these varieties that we have sampled here today are just absolutely amazing. So,
and I think what they've done is by building the brand and not focusing on the variety, you can kind of rotate around. Hey, you know, grapery cotton candies this week, or teardrops, or the moondrops, or the gumdrops. So you get to have like a different experience based upon, and you look for those different unique colors from the blue to the pink, to the kind of the orange one. It's kind of cool what they've done.
All right, folks, Fresh from the Field Fridays is brought to you by the Produce Industry Network and Ag Life Media. Be sure to check out aglifemedia.com for all your fresh produce news and be up to date with what's happening on all the other programs here on the Produce Industry Network.
This is Ross, the Produce Boss, coming to you live from Indianapolis. Look for me on the different socials, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, posting all sorts of different content. We'll have some clips from our recording here. So if you're listening and you want to see some clips of what we discussed and talked about with Jim, look for those. Dan, stay fresh, keep growing, and let produce lead your way.
Absolutely. And be sure to check out my YouTube and Rumble channels called Getting Fresh with Dan the Produce Man. And all my social media can be found at dantheproduceman.com. And as Ross said, I am going to stay fresh. And folks, this is Dan the Produce Man reminding you that it's always best when you get it fresh.
You've been listening to Fresh from the Field Fridays with Dan the Produce Man and Ross the Produce Boss. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Spotify for fresh weekly episodes. For more, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Produce Industry Network and at Dan the Produce Man and at Ross the Produce Boss. Until next time, we'll see you in the fields or on the horizon.